Star Trek Discovery, the newest Star Trek show, taking us back into space and the search for the unknown. These are the recaps of the Front Row Network. Join us as we are discovering Star Trek. And now your captain, Scott McFarland.
Hello, everyone out there in podcast land and our world. Welcome to the Front Row Network. I'm going to remember that it's a network now and not a podcast, whatever that means. And welcome to Discovering Star Trek. We are back for two episodes in 2 weeks, so I guess this is actually like an officially back thing now. I'm Scott, and with me is...
Mike.
And Blake.
Mike has returned.
We have gone one day without an assimilation.
We're going to talk about that, that's for damn sure.
Uh-huh.
But, Mike, a lot of things have happened since you've been gone. We recorded one episode in a year, which is impressive. But also, I don't know if you're aware of this, we became an NPR podcast.
Which means we did see that.
We can't swear as much.
Oh. He tells me after I had just informed him how many beers I've had before this.
So how about we give Mike a chance, since he wasn't on week one, to give us his first thoughts on Picard, and then we can jump into episode two.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Sorry I missed the last podcast. I really wanted to jump in this one from the ground floor because it I don't know if I necessarily have a lot to say about it other than I really liked it, and I was very pleasantly surprised by how good it was, the direction it was going in, or seems to be going in, compared to maybe, you know, we had some discussions before the first episode aired about what we maybe thought, you know, was going to happen. And I'm overall really digging the tone of the show so far. And that continued on through tonight, or whatever you want to call it, today's episode, yesterday's episode.
Yeah. So let's go ahead and just start right into today's or yesterday's episode. And I love the fact that CBS is dropping at midnight on Thursdays, because now I don't have to wait until 8 o'clock to watch it, which is nice. But we're talking about Maps and Legends, episode two. And we are going to do full spoilers on this. So for some reason you haven't watched Maps and Legends, make sure you go out and check out both episode one and episode two of Picard. And if you can't because of CBS All Access, get a hold of me. I've given out my password to like 15 different people already. So you're fine. We can get you to watch it. Sorry, CBS. Okay. And so let's go
nowadays,
ahead. And...
I was going to say, nowadays, everybody knows somebody with a Plex account. I mean.
If you want to watch it, you'll
find a way. There are ways.
Well, and heck, episode one is free on YouTube. Although it was noted, and of course they don't give out viewership information on these streaming services, but supposedly episode one of Picard was the most streamed episode of any show CBS All Access has put out so far. That includes all the mainstream, you know, cop shows as well, too.
Well, I buy that, because only grandmothers watch CSI, and none of them know how to use the internet, so.
Truth. But so people were interested, and so now I think the big question is, will they carry on past that first episode and the, you know, the novelty of Patrick Stewart returning 20 years later? So let's go ahead and dive in. Let's just do overall impressions of the episode, then we'll just talk on different subjects as well, too. So Blake, what'd you think of the episode?
So overall, I think the episode really continued nicely from episode one. We talked about in episode one, we liked kind of the framing and the setup that it's going into. I had a couple annoyances with this episode. I think we saw our first appearance in Picard of just stupid future tech, and which I'm sure we'll get into the conversation on that one. That would be the one, the little wave to scanner across the room, and all of a sudden there's holograms.
Now you can see the past. Yeah.
Yes.
But not just the past. You can see exactly the past you're looking for.
Yes.
Because you know the past is infinite.
And you can erase it by time index, apparently.
Yes. Anyone who actually enjoys Interstellar, and I know there's not many of you out there, but I am one of them. No, that doesn't work.
See, I'm one too, and yeah, that doesn't work. So that part annoyed me, but overall, I liked the episode. I thought it was really well done. I will say one annoyance I am starting to share with you, though, Scott, is I really think they should have done the first two as one episode because it's getting some awkward cut points.
Yeah, we talked about this a little bit in the last episode, and I talked about it with Blake on our side chat. But I really – and this – when they premiered this, I think it premiered in Germany at a theater, I believe. They premiered the first three episodes as a movie. And I think Netflix has made me spoiled me because I'm used to binging TV shows now, and drawing this thing out is making it seem even slower than what I think it would. I mean, I don't want to spoil anything, guys, but I think in episode three, we may actually have a Star Trek. He may actually leave the planet. Maybe. Maybe. Mike, what do you think?
I mean, we've left the planet. We visited the Borg cube, but Picard is
the artifact, sir. It is not a Borg cube.
Yes. Okay. overall, I would agree. I think this episode felt very much like the first episode. It's to use your term, because I did listen to your episode last week before coming into this. It was a slow burn, which is okay. I'm not so impatient. You know, that I can't let a good story kind of build itself up to a climax. But as a week by week format, like you said, we're kind of spoiled by Netflix. And like, personally, I'm currently binging The Expanse. I just blasted through The Witcher, Lost in Space season two, who knows how many other shows. So it's like a real kick in the butt.
There you go. Good job.
It'd be buttocks to have to wait, you know, and watch one episode and then wait a week. And to your point with the cut point, it's like no more or no place was that more jarring than tonight's episode when it ended and immediately cut to the preview for next week. And I was like, what?
Yeah. I didn't
like,
even notice.
Is that it?
In streaming episodes, you know, they don't have to be locked in at the 44.3 minute or whatever minute mark it is. So, you know, some episodes are 50 minutes, some episodes are a little more, a little less.
Yeah. I mean, even that I still don't get, because this is a show built for streaming. I understand if you want to release it week by week, but it doesn't have to be like on the money 44 minutes.
Yeah. Well, that's what I was getting at is, you know, I wasn't expecting it to end like that. I figured, okay, we're in the middle of a new scene. Mm-hmm. We got a brand new character showing up. We're at Vasquez Rocks. I'm waiting for the Gorn to show up, and we're done.
I mean, those are just my general impressions, though. So overall, I liked it. It's still really playing for me. The strong point of the series so far in two episodes is the sense of mystery that it's building. It's the, I don't know what the hell's going on, but I really want to find out.
Yeah.
But you know, with that said, there are also some definite things that are bothering me, and we'll talk about those in a little bit, but we obviously touched on one of them already.
Yeah.
So. To jump in real quick, just because on the runtime piece, you know, I could understand that with Discovery because it was broadcast in Canada on Space Network. It was broadcast TV.
Yeah, yeah.
This one's not even doing that because in Canada it's Netflix, it's Amazon. So it's even streaming in Canada this time. So yeah, the runtime thing is weird with this one.
Yeah, agreed. And it's again, it goes back to what we've all been saying. These first three episodes, and I'm sure we'll be able to cap that off next week, is a movie. I think Blake. Yeah. I think you said it last episode. It's a chapter. We're still in chapter one. We're putting all the pieces on the board. We're catching up to where people have been for the past 20 years. And then chapter two, which will be second act, is when we finally go to space, which I'm hoping is probably the end of next episode, guessing. But I also thought we were going to see the Rikers this episode, and we haven't even seen them yet. So sooner or later.
Yeah, I've been. I don't know if you want to say pleasantly surprised, but aside from Brent Spiner, I'm actually shocked we haven't seen more of the cameos already. I really thought they would all be front loaded in the series for whatever reason.
Yeah, and you know, we definitely got some more callbacks. I mean, they mentioned LaForge, the Rikers, Worf.
Yeah.
But this is one thing I was going to say. about the show entirely is, even though it's obviously set several decades into the future from what we know, and it's being shown as a show that should be open to anyone, even if you haven't watched these shows before, but there is a lot of continuity in the background that I really do appreciate.
There is.
I actually, my wife is watching this with me, and she is not a Star Trek fan in the slightest. I had to make her watch Nemesis, even though it's not a good movie, because if you want to know why Data is such an important part to Picard these 20 years now, you kind of have to watch Nemesis. And not to mention B4 is involved and everything else. I mean, there's a lot of callbacks to that. The next thing I wanted to talk about anyway was, obviously, we're going to spend the most time probably talking about Picard. So another huge callback we got this episode is he does have the syndrome, Aaron Mannix syndrome, that was referenced in the final episode of TNG.
That's what they were talking about. Okay.
Yeah, because if you remember, in All Good Things, he finds out in the future timeline, which doesn't exist anymore, that he is he has Aromatic syndrome, and it is impacting his life more so than we see him in this timeline. He's kind of senile at some points, but at the end of the episode, so in this timeline, he goes to Crusher and asks her to scan him, and she does find it, and she says, it may not do anything, but it could come up later on. And of course, here it is. So what do you guys think of where we find Picard with that?
Well, it's kind of interesting. Actually, when I watched the episode, I didn't catch that hook, to be honest with you. I actually thought it was more a reference of, you know, some leftover from his de-assimilation process that they were referring to. And I thought that would then link into the story, you know, further down the season. Since we obviously know that there's a Picard season 2, and it's going to be pretty hard to do that if he's like dead or dying or has dementia, you know. So that was very interesting. I did want to ask you guys, because I consider you more authorities than I am. excuse me, the doctor character that he met with.
Yeah.
Obviously, they mentioned in continuity that he's an old shipmate of Picard's from the Stargazer. Which is a deep cut, interesting reference, which they also referenced last episode in his little vault. But had we met that character before? I know the actor. I immediately recognized him.
Oh, yeah, he's a character actor.
That guy roles, you know. Yeah, exactly. But I didn't know if we'd ever met him in Trek before.
No.
If we have, it's in Beta Canon, the books, which I haven't read near enough books to even know anything about it. But it was either a medical officer or the chief medical officer of Stargazer. Now that means that he also served with Crusher, as in I forgot his name now, the dad Crusher, because he was on the Stargazer as well too, and that's where he died on an away mission. So there's a lot of callbacks there, definitely.
That would have been Jack Crusher with the
Jack. Thank you.
Which yes, that kind of opens you. Another thing, and again, going to our back channel check, because we had mentioned that when they did the references to the characters, you know, they mentioned Worf, they mentioned the Rikers, they mentioned LaForge, and there was a name they didn't mention, and that was Crusher. Mm-hmm. And then you've got when he gets this medical diagnosis and he reaches out for this physician's note, basically, to go back into space, and shows up and gives this diagnosis. Yeah. It was this old doctor from the Stargazer, not even a reference of Crusher. So I'm starting to get inclined that Crusher is no longer with us in this future. Because there's been no reference to her, and just given the character dynamic they built there by the end of TNG, if she was alive, she would have been the one there doing that, not.
Yeah, and I think you guys said that in your podcast too, that it's kind of a big elephant in the room about where's Beverly Crusher at in this continuity, and whether we'll find out some reference to her later on, maybe in his interaction with the Rikers, or if maybe, you know, I don't know. I don't know what rumor mills circulate out there, if Gaius McFadden is one of the surprise cameos that could happen later on in the season.
It could be, but she has not, you know, I mean, Michael Dorn has been calling for a Worf TV show since like we were all 12. So he's been out there. LeVar Burton's been involved in the production a little bit. Frakes directed an episode, and he will be on the show. We haven't heard much of anything from Gaius McFadden at all, if anything, that I've seen. So I don't know. Either one of two things have happened. Either she's died or there's been some kind of major breakup, because obviously in the alternate timeline, they were married and divorced to where he doesn't even feel like calling her. I'm leaning towards the death piece too.
Yeah.
So let's keep talking about Picard. What else did you guys enjoy about his character movements so far in this episode?
So I liked the
little or not enjoy.
Well, I'm going to stick with the enjoyed part. The interactions he had when he visited Starfleet Command.
Oh yes.
Had that chat with the CNC of Starfleet, which I want to address one part with that, because I saw some comments flying around about, oh, people wouldn't swear in Star Trek. And I think that's not true. We've seen it before.
Yeah.
But what I will say is when they're putting it in, and even when they did it in Discovery, when they're doing it in this one, it's not gratuitous that they're just throwing in the F-bomb every other word. I mean, it's when they're putting it in, you know, when a character is angry and expressing that, you know, that came out. So I don't think they're overusing it.
Yeah, I've seen that too. I've seen several people, and actually people who were positive on the show, saying that they don't appreciate that there was two F-bombs and an S in there as well too this episode. I'm not one to care about profanity at all. In fact, I've been yelled at by the leaders of this podcast to keep my profanity down. Thanks, Craig. I'm trying. So I really don't care. But I think it was startling just because we had none of it in the first episode.
Yeah. Jarring. It's jarring in Trek. There's not been an F-bomb dropped in Trek for how many decades now? And
there was one in Discovery.
Yeah. But that's also, you know.
And I mean, Data said shit in Generations. Cochrane said it in First Contact. But until Discovery, I don't think we've had any other major ones.
It's still just jarring. And I get it. It doesn't bother me, but it's kind of like, oh.
Yeah.
Unexpected.
But that aside, Blake, continue on, because that episode, that scene and scenes at CNC is huge for this show.
Yeah, because I mean, so obviously Picard is separated from Starfleet. He's wanting to go back on this one mission, and you can tell that, especially after that interview he gave in episode one, that there is a lot of resentment there, including on the Federation side towards him.
Mm-hmm.
And this also gives us a little bit more of that background as to why this Federation made the decisions that they did. You heard the Admiral mention that, you know, there were 14 worlds allegedly wanting to leave if they didn't pull support for the Romulans. So it almost sounds like the Federation Council is like, okay, how do we, to save this, we have to cut it off. We have to cut off the aid.
Yeah, and you know,
more into that decision-making process and explained a little bit more of that background.
Yeah.
And I've been praising this show for the continuity, but the one thing I wish they would give me a little more detail on is, yes, I understand the Romulans are our oldest enemy. I get that. The Romulan Earth War was what started Starfleet. But the Romulans were our allies during the Dominion War. Mm-hmm. So I'm trying to figure out, are they just going to ignore that? Which, fine, not many people watch Deep Space Nine, sadly. But the whole oldest enemy thing, they've done it a couple times now. I'm like, why are they our enemy?
But keep in mind,
in DS9,
they weren't the war with false pretext.
Yeah, but even with Nemesis,
I'm thinking maybe somewhere along the line, something came out that soured that.
That would just be like a throwaway line. Like,
you know.
It feels like it needs more context.
Because
I agree. That was the biggest positive takeaway from that scene of Picard visiting Starfleet, was it added conflicts or a little bit more context to that decision than the shift of Starfleet towards it made Starfleet no longer quote unquote evil, you know, which is going into the series, the thing I was most afraid of. I was really afraid that I was going to watch a whole series where Starfleet had gone to the dark side, and I didn't want to see that. I mean, I'm still kind of getting that impression based on some of the other things that happened in this episode, but the kind of like, well, no, that makes a lot of sense. That Starfleet's a lot of different worlds and a lot of different races, and not everybody was going to be on board with helping the Romulans because the Romulans are dicks. That's not a swear. So it helped to kind of put that into some perspective, I thought.
Well, in Trek Corps, I think I shared the
thread.
It was Trek Corps did a whole thread – of instances throughout canon of Star Trek where the Federation has done less than, you know, honorable things, you know, ordering Picard. And this goes back to tie in with the series, back to what was the episode, Descent, right? Is that where they got Hugh? Or no, the episode was Hugh, wasn't it? That Admiral Dechev ordered Picard to put that virus through Hugh, Hugh the Borg, into the collective.
You know, no, you're right. The first time was Descent. And then the first time they found Hugh was Iborg, and the crew decided to do it.
Yeah.
And then they backed out. And then Descent, Starfleet came in and said, yeah, you were right the first time.
Yeah. So there was that. Then you've got the whole premise of Insurrection was the Federation Council ordered the forced relocation of people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean,
there's instances throughout of the Federation doing things that are that less than noble, less than honorable decision.
Yeah, and we've well established Section 31 now through a couple of different series, and the fact that they oftentimes get up to some things that are not kosher.
Well, that's what I liked with Trek Corps List. They didn't even go there. They just went with like the what would have been the public decisions that were made, not even 31 or one-off things like Paradise Lost and Admiral Layton.
Well, and even though, I mean, personally, I still agree with Picard, they should have gone full bore in trying to help the Romulans as much as they could. I appreciate, and Mike, you were getting this too, that we saw the counterpoint. It wasn't this, the Federation said, screw it. It's like, look, we were building the largest fleet in history and it got us screwed and we had to back off.
Yeah, and I definitely want to talk about that part of it a little bit more too. But just quickly backing up to reiterate your point, it does – excuse me, I'm going to cough again. Discovery kind of did this too, or was guilty of this as well, as far as introducing this big Klingon war conflict where humanity and the Federation was pushed to the brink. And it's something that like we never heard about, you know, prior to that. And it's that issue with being a prequel, you know, here again, this isn't a prequel, but I do agree. They're trying to build this case of the Romulans being the big bad in the universe, as far as the Federation is concerned. Meanwhile, last season of Discovery, or two seasons ago in Discovery, you just showed us that the Klingons pushed us way closer to the brink than we ever were. And so feel good or appropriate that we have this animosity towards the Romulans for no real reason.
I get the Klingons have been used a lot, and so I understand that they probably don't want to use them again. But even in 15, 20 years before this show aired, there was another Federation Klingon war. It was started by the Dominion, but it was still there. So there's always animosity there too.
Well, and I think if we go back to Nemesis real quick,
please don't.
Because, well, God, I hate doing this. God, that movie sucked. But
I just watched it 2 nights ago. It does suck. Go ahead though.
But you had the Romulans, you know, yes, you know, Shinzo and the Riemann took over, whatever, stupid plot point. But you had the Romulan leadership in the military who was actively wanting to take on the Federation at that point.
Yeah, true.
They were backing him because he wanted to take on the Federation.
Yeah, and the current leadership was taking a more peaceful approach. Yeah.
Yeah, so they took out that leadership. And the one thing Nemesis never established is after the dust settled there, who took over the Romulan government?
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's
like you said, though, they could have helped their case with this by adding a couple of throwaway lines to lend it some more weight about recent activities that made Starfleet or the Federation less friendly with the Romulans compared to what we last saw in DS9.
Well, because I mean, we're seeing with the reclamation site, the Borg cube, the Federation and Romulans are working together on this science project.
It seems I still don't understand this, and I'm hoping there's more explanation.
I'm assuming, and I'm part of this. I don't know if you guys are watching Ready Room with Will Wheaton on YouTube, but the production staff pointed out that the cube is in Romulan space. The Romulans don't care about the Borg that are inside, except for they want the tech. But in order to get at the tech, they are allowing Federation scientists to come in and do whatever they want, just let us have all the tech. So there's an uneasy alliance there working with
I guess what I was unclear on in that point was whether the scientists who obviously are beyond just Romulans.
Yeah, there's a whether, in there. I mean,
they're Federation citizens, but are they? They're obviously not Starfleet. So I kind of wondered how above board any of that actually is.
Yeah, I don't know, because the character that gets thrown in at the end was talking about basically her visa got denied for 6 months. So there's some kind of diplomatic thing going on.
There must be a process, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, they said it's being ran by the Romulan Free State, which could be the new official Romulan.
All the guards were Romulans. Yeah. So they're clearly in charge.
One of our main characters we haven't met yet is going to be the guy from Lord of the Rings, Romulan. So I don't know his name yet, but he looks like the elf from Lord of the Rings. That's all I got.
Oh.
So I mean, we may get some more context there, too. Although
is that character a Romulan or a Vulcan? I will admit right now that I'm having a hard time telling them apart in this series.
Well, and that's something I actually appreciate. And this is another thing, if you watch the Ready Room show, they decided that, you know, yes, in TNG, most of the Romulans had the ridges, and that defined them more than the Vulcans. But what they're going for here is different nationalities. So some Romulans don't have any prosthetics. Others have larger ridges. So they're kind of playing off the, like, even, I mean, if you're on Earth, you're going to have different facial features depending on what.
I feel like they kind of have to do that to help justify the changes with the Klingons that they've gone through over the years.
Oh, God, yes.
And it makes well enough sense. I guess the part where I actually was getting more so confused was I'm seeing characters who have to be Vulcan based on context, but they seem to be emoting more than I would expect.
Well, I asked Blake on our side chat, I was like, so is the Commodore Vulcan or Romulan?
Yeah, thank you. That's the one that was the most interesting to me tonight.
And with that one, though, and I called back in that side chat, too, and I can't remember the name of it, but there was a TNG episode.
Defector.
And the whole premise, thank you, Defector. And the whole premise was there was a Vulcan ambassador who was going to be meeting with the Vulcans, or meeting with the Romulans, and it turned out that this Vulcan ambassador was a Romulan spy the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not without canon that, and they've commented how many times that the Vulcans and Romulans have such similar physiology anyway.
Yeah, well, they're cousin races.
Yeah,
and I think we're going to get into that more too. And I know we're bouncing around, but they mentioned that the Tal Shiar is a smaller offshoot of a different organization, which
Zavash.
Yeah, thanks for retconning that, but whatever. They mentioned that for 1,000 years or whatever, they have been anti-AI, which again is a retcon, but well, whatever. But I wonder if we're going to go back to the schism of Vulcans and Romulans, and maybe that may be a catalyst of some sort. I don't know. I can't remember how far back they split, but there was a time where they split.
Yeah, I do remember that in continuity, but I kind of doubt we'll see anything about that in the series. I feel like it would be unnecessary to the story that they're trying to tell.
But it would be nerdy, and I would appreciate it. But yes,
it would
you're right.
be nerdy. But yes, to your point, I was very confused about what race the Commodore was based on the way she was interacting with, you know, all of the other characters. And then the fact that she's also, you know, working with Romulan operatives operating inside the Federation.
Yeah. And, you know, let's get into these guys a little bit because they're obviously going to be a main focal point of the show. We've got the woman who looks like a human, who obviously we now know is a Romulan.
Mm-hmm.
We have the Romulan on the reclamation site, and they are sister, I believe.
Rizzo and Narek, yes.
Yeah. And I'm gathering that the Commodore is part of that too, and she may be playing off as a Vulcan when she actually is a Romulan, as Blake said. But the weird thing is, mannerism she's giving when she's alone is still Vulcan. Like, they did the telltale, you know, hands behind her back before anyone walked in, but whatever. So I'm wondering, and this is a theory of mine that's just kind of percolating, is are these guys actually a part of the Romulan Free State or the, you know, the underground Romulan Empire, or is this just some kind of like mob family that's trying to screw around with the Federation because they seem to be interconnected more than just on a mission?
My theory is, you know, Starfleet's got Section 31. Mike mentioned it earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it would, within universe, I think what their explanation would be is this is going to be the Romulan 31.
So the Tal Shiar?
Well, this Zod Bosch thing.
More secretive than that, apparently.
Yeah, yeah. True.
Well, keep in mind, prior to Discovery, though, it took great lengths to know about 31. Discovery made it an open secret.
Yeah, and now we're going to have a TV show, which I'm not looking forward to still.
No, yeah. I wondered about the Commodore's. Did anybody notice anything weird about the Commodore's badge? I'm trying to remember now because I only watched the episode one time, but I swore one of those characters had an odd badge. And the Commodore's in particular, I thought, almost looked like it could have been a Section 31 badge.
Like her comm badge was darker?
Yeah.
Section 31
badge is like black.
So the Discovery they are that they showed for the show that I've seen in all the previews. Remember the future comm badge they had in All Good Things that was kind of the outline with the gold bars behind it?
And they used them in Voyager as well, too. It's the same ones.
Yeah, that the ones for this series are kind of similar to that. It's a silverish or goldish outline, but it's got a darker backplate to it, like a matte finish backplate.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was seeing, and I was trying to make out whether there was an implication that Commodore was a spook, was a Section 31 operative, given that the other admiral called her to say, hey, are you running Cobot or Curlwork stuff that we should know about? you know? So,
which the fact that the CNC doesn't know what covert operations are going on is kind of weird too, but
yeah.
But you know, yeah. I think, and again, that's another thing with that. We're definitely bouncing around here, but I like the fact again that, as we've mentioned a couple times, it's not that the Federation's evil; it's that the Federation rests on its laurels. Mm-hmm. And it was the same thing we had with Homefront with Deep Space Nine, and it was literally the same thing where. Oh, the Dominion can't ever come to Earth. It's Earth. Well, you have a changeling screwing around. The CNC is saying, we're on Earth. We're fine. When obviously there are Romulans running around assassinating people, but she doesn't want to believe that because it's Utopia.
Is it that she doesn't want to believe that or that she knows and she wants everybody else to piss off?
I don't think she knows about this. I think she truly is.
I got the opposite impression. I very much thought that she knew all about it and told the other admiral to go away with that line, that if it was going on, I would know about it.
Because even
that was what made me think she was like the head of the spy ring, you know?
Well, she's definitely ahead of a spy ring, just not the Federation one. But yeah. And she's also, if you notice, the when she was on the screen last episode, she didn't have the pointed ears, but she was the mom telling her to go find Picard, telling Dodge to go find Picard. So she's very much in play here. Yeah, it's the same actress. I went back and looked.
Really? The Commodore?
Yeah.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, if it's not the same actress, they are really, really.
I would be really shocked if that's the same actress when that's the direction that they're going. Okay. But anyway,
you got the computer in front of you. Go check it out.
I'm looking.
Yeah, go ahead. But it looked to me like it was the same actress, but she didn't have pointed ears.
No, this actress is only in this episode, credited on IMDb.
I'm wrong.
Yeah, I don't think they would make
two different Asian ladies.
Oh God! Don't do that.
Way to go, Scott.
You're gonna get me in trouble. Don't do that. They look alike. Those two actresses. Okay. Well, so we've blown through Picard. We've blown through the Romulan plot for a bit. I do want to talk a little bit about the opening scene with the attack on Mars. My one complaint right off the bat is: can we stop with the hit you over the head names of androids? The prototype was B4. The guy who dropped the shields is Fate, F8. Really? Come on now, please.
I am okay. So maybe I missed out on this last week. I'm very confused about the state of AI is in terms of the Federation, and I'm a little bit frustrated with them throwing around so heavily the talk of synthetics without us really knowing what synthetics mean.
Yeah.
Because on one hand, we know that Data is unique and they've never been able to recreate Data before, except for apparently his daughters, Daj and Soji, that nobody else knew about.
Yeah.
Alternatively, we have these androids that working on Mars who look very much like Data, obviously are not as sophisticated. Still pretty sophisticated, in my opinion.
I read it, and this goes back to playing way too much Mass Effect. there's virtual intelligence and artificial intelligence. And I read these guys as virtual intelligence because, like, they play it off when they started. He tried to have a conversation, and he was just repeating what he was told with the hell yeah and everything else.
Or he would just reacted without actually understanding, yeah. Which is what, you know.
So he was much less sophisticated than Data. Data was sentient. These guys were not.
I guess I still question what the sentience level, but given that they put them all to bed in a hangar bay standing up like in Westworld, then...
And when the one thing that did get confirmed is it definitely wasn't an artificial revolt. He got programmed to do what he was doing. Yeah, we saw that in the eyes. It's clear that somebody played that off, which we all assumed was the case, but it was not just they went rogue.
Well, and I think I would comment on with the piece with the androids, and this going back to Measure of a Man, the whole reason Bruce Maddox, who plays into this series, because they've mentioned him several times.
Oh, yeah, he's coming in sooner or later.
Because he ran the program at the Daystrom Institute, and Allison Pill's character, who I can't remember the name of.
Eloise, is that right?
Agnes Girardi.
Agnes, thank you.
So she mentioned that the synthetics on Mars came from the program at Daystrom.
Yeah.
And back in Measure of a Man, the whole reason Bruce Maddox wanted Data was because he talked about a fleet of Datas, one on every starship, that there could be Datas that could do the jobs that people that were too dangerous for people to do.
Yeah, that could continue operating when everyone else was incapacitated, etc.
Yeah, so it kind of seems like this is what Maddox was working on, because Maddox never stopped his work. Data told him he thought some of his ideas were intriguing, so that work continued.
They were sharing research.
So I think when we find Bruce Maddox in this series, that's when we're going to get the answers to these questions on the synthetic. But,
and I do agree with you, Mike, to a point, too, because there's definitely a leap in logic here from Data, Lore, and kind of B4 and, you know, their mom were the only androids we'd ever seen in Starfleet and in the universe to they're all over the place. And even in the continuing shows like Voyager, as much as I'm not a Voyager fan, there were episodes where the EMH was that answer. And there was an episode where they were using holograms to mine dilithium ore as, you know, hard labor. So, I mean, the android thing was never really a part of this until now. So I'm hoping they do make that connection. And I think you're right.
Yeah, Yeah, I don't have a problem with any of it. I just feel like there's a really big gap where we suddenly jumped ahead and we're putting a big focus on a thing that has not been established before. And it's the same deal with the Romulan conflict.
Yeah.
And I will say, I feel like I'm a little disappointed almost in part at the direction the story is going. Part of it, I'm really happy because I didn't expect it. But the other part is, you know, I really thought going into this that we were going to see a story wherein – you know, Maddox had gone off and created this, you know, mass of android, sentient android life forms close enough to Data. And I really thought there was going to be something about, you know, the fact that they were pressed into service in, we'll say, abusive circumstances under the pressure of building this fleet of ships for Romulan, relief effort. And I thought, you know, maybe there was a legitimate AI uprising, and it was because all of the things that Picard and Data pushed back at Maddox about in the first place came to fruition. And that doesn't seem to be the case. And I mean, I'm okay with that. It's just, I don't know, it's odd. It's not what I expected.
Yeah, no, I don't think you're getting that story, but I could have seen that story.
It feels really logical, I guess, is my point. And it seems like it just isn't going that way.
Well, and I'll tell you, it's definitely coming full circle now that this is the same writer's room as Discovery. The entire theme of this new relaunch of Star Trek is AI. We saw it a little bit in Discovery season one. Discovery season two was all about it. And now we're talking about it in Picard. So their whole ethos here is the interaction in the future with artificial intelligence, and whether that's good, bad, or in the middle. And I think that's what we're just going to be dealing with the entire run of these shows.
Well, it's true. And I am part of me, and for that reason, I am actually glad that the story is going in a different direction and putting the focus more towards the Romulans, you know, versus it being a Blade Runner in a Star Trek setting, which is kind of where I thought it was going to go.
Well, if you saw the picture of Greater Boston in the first episode, that was definitely Blade Runner.
Yes.
But yeah. Go ahead.
Well, so that said, I mean, maybe I'm jumping ahead here, but I want to say that I guess the weak point for me in this week's episode is this revelation of this brand new, never before heard of subfaction of the Tal Shiar that's super against AI for some reason. I really felt deflated when they took that turn in the story, because it felt like the big cool mystery that they were building is now cashed out on this like kind of contrived thing.
It struck me as the writers are like, the Tal Shiar is not our thing. We have to make our own thing. So let's make a super Tal Shiar. Even the Tal Shiar, former Tal Shiar guy, I don't know his name, who's working at the winery or the vineyard, says, oh, here we go. When she starts talking about it, like even he doesn't want to deal with it. And we don't either.
But it's worse than that, because it's not even that there's super Tal Shiar. It's that there's super Tal Shiar with a very narrative specific focus.
Yes. And they've been around forever, like ever.
Doing this thing, apparently. Mm-hmm. Traveling the universe and making sure the Gorn don't invent androids.
Which is why I also I'm not – this is one of the reasons why I'm not looking forward to the Section 31 show they keep talking about, is Section 31 was a plot element. It was Deep Space Nine wanted to do something with first spy gaming and then kind of talking about the idea that there are factions inside the Federation that aren't all warm and fuzzy. But it was one-off plot devices. Like every few seasons we'd see them. But now – they've been here for forever and they've been turning the tides, and in Discovery Time, they actually wore special badges because everyone knew who they were.
This is like a cultural thing. That feels like a cultural thing almost, because if you play, you know, watch a lot of movies where, you know, Jack Ryan is out there saving the democracy from the terrorists. Ops guy. But you know what I mean? Like, you see that same story over and over and over in different formats. Every Call of Duty game you've ever played the single player plot for, the special forces, this team of three guys saves the world from the brink of destruction by doing the things that no one else is willing to do. And while I do appreciate that the Federation is this really big, really complex organism that's somehow held together by ideals, that there has to be somebody in the background doing things that are maybe less than ideal to keep it all together.
There's always a jerk.
I'm A-OK with all of that. What I don't want is I don't want to watch a show about it. I don't want it in my face 24/7.
And this is a conversation we've been having offline. And Blake, you mentioned the Trek Core piece where they were pointing out that the Federation's always had these issues. And I'm with you, Mike. I'm okay with the whole idea that you're going to have factions, and I like the idea that those factions still think they're doing what's right, even if it's not what we know to be ethically right.
Section 31 pops up once in a while in a story where there's a difficult situation and a difficult decision needs to be made.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
But I don't want to see it every week.
Because at the end of the day, I'm okay with certain characters failing in the idea that we are better now. I don't want to see the entire structure fall apart. And I unfortunately think that's what we're going for, especially with the previews of Discovery Season 3. And it's clear to me that they are interconnecting these two shows. I mean, I'm not complaining about this because I like that ship, but we saw the Constitution Class Enterprise, and it was the Constitution Class Enterprise from Discovery.
I mean, it sure leaves me feeling kind of bleak about where Picard Season 1 is actually going to end. And I don't know how the air dates overlap on these two shows, but I agree 100%. There's no way they're not going to relate to one another. Yeah. Discovery didn't take a leap into the future for no reason.
No, and it's going to show the effects of what's happened to the Federation to a point where it's fallen apart.
And I have a feeling that Picard season finale is going to lead us down the path where we watch the Federation fall apart.
That's going to be a very dark season two of Picard, since we know it's not going to come back for 1,000 years until Discovery fixes it, which is what they're obviously going to do. I don't know.
I think for me with these points, though, and we talked about this a bit in the last episode, and where Star Trek has always intersected the real world of what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, you look at things, particularly putting it in, you know, the context of the Federation. And they had the interview, as we talked about last time, with Patrick Stewart, and he was talking about, you're going to see Brexit. You're going to see how these things, you know, and Star Trek's always done this.
Oh, absolutely.
They've always had these allegories. So I think looking at the world we're in now, and this is what they even said when they made Logan, which has been described as a very heavy influence on this, is this show in the here and now is being created in a very different world in a very different time than what TNG was. And we've all commented before on kind of that scrubbed, idealized TNG versus, you know, I think, well, two of us, I'm not sure about you, Mike, but at least two of us, you know, with our affinity towards Deep Space Nine, when it started getting a little grittier and a little darker, because it connected more to the world we lived in at that time.
Yep,
I don't think you could have the same TNG tone and tenor with this. It just wouldn't work.
Oh, it's what you're telling me is,
yeah.
What you're telling me is, I don't dislike Star Trek. I dislike the world I'm in.
Yeah.
Okay. Just check.
Part of it.
And that's our other back channel chat, Scott.
Oh yes, that is very much so. But you know, and you're right. I mean, I keep hitting on Deep Space Nine too because I think it is the best Trek series there is. But I shared with you guys the scene from Deep Space Nine where Quark is talking about root beer and how he's, you know, making that analogy to the Federation. It's warm and bubbly and it gets on your nerves, but then you want more of it. And it's
yeah. Well, that's certainly not the Starfleet we're going to see soon.
No, it's not. But as long as Star Trek remains hopeful, even if that hope is, you know, it's going to take a little bit to get to the hopefulness. I understand that, but I don't need Battlestar Galactica. I don't need that. Yeah. I have that. Star Trek should be different.
And I do think somebody in that writer's room is cognizant of that because we've seen a lot of those really uplifting moments in Discovery, mm-hmm. even though, you know, God, we really do need to go back and talk about Discovery season two because I have a feeling we have some very different opinions of it. But
I'm doing a rewatch of it right now and I'm all for that.
Yeah.
I just watched the second episode of New Eden, and I feel that's the most TOS show that's been on the air in the past 20 years. It's so TOS, it's not even funny.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I guess I'm just saying, back to your point, though, like there are those moments, those really uplifting, we're Starfleet, and we're going to push through, and we're going to do the impossible because we have to, because gosh darn it, we're the good guys, you know, and those moments appear several times throughout Discovery. So somebody out there is aware of it. And I don't doubt that we'll have that moment.
As long as we have that, I'm good with it. I don't need like, you know, saccharine sweet, but I do need optimism. That's why I'm loving Lost in Space because, it's very much more of an episodic show. I mean, serialized, but there's episodes and everything else. But at the end of the day, it's all about, you know, no matter what happens, we can make it through and not just the family structure.
We'll go straight off the rails and just say that Lost in Space is one of the best things on TV, period.
I'm glad you and I agree on that because I really enjoy it. And
they
haven't announced season three yet. And if they cancel that show, I'm going to be very annoyed.
Oh, Jesus, I will take a hostage.
You do not leave that cliffhanger the way it is and not make a season sir. Three.
And you best start teasing some ideas from the old movie, too.
But the other thing I wanted to hit on with the whole optimism of Trek and, you know, the Federation falling apart is they literally are taking a page from Gene Roddenberry's playbook. He always had this script. And it was turned into a TV show of Kevin Sorbo called Andromeda. But the idea that the Federation falls apart and has to be rebuilt. And that was originally one of his ideas for the second Star Trek iteration after the movies was he wanted to do this Andromeda type show. And of course he decided to do TNG instead. So basically Discovery season 3, and looks like part of Picard, is going to be based off of Roddenberry's original ideas, whether he likes it or not.
Well, and I'm okay with that idea too. I mean, there's a lot of historical precedent to say that big empires do eventually fall apart. They crumble under their own weight for one reason or the other. And so we could see a rebuild story. You know, we could see where the Federation splinters apart for whatever reason. And I'd like to see a story where it comes back together again and how they do it.
So what you're saying is the Federation president's going to make his Targ a senator, and that's where things are going to go bad.
Yeah, something like that.
Sorry.
I get you. I hear it.
Really bad Roman Empire.
It'd be a tardigrade, but sure. Yeah.
A tardigrade.
Odd. Not another one.
No more mushrooms, please. No more.
I mean, we already have full forensic scanners. We don't need mushrooms.
Yes. Yeah. So jumping back on topic.
Yeah, we didn't even hit on those forensic scanners. Well, I guess we did.
I mean, do we need to?
I think we all said we hated it.
Although
it was real dumb. I do appreciate the fact that they, and maybe I read into this more than was required or intended, but you know, it was forbidden or banned Federation technology for obvious reasons, such as privacy concerns and otherwise utter bullshit, but like,
but you know, it did lead into that conversation again about the whole virtual intelligence thing and how she hacked the system very intelligently. Maybe a little bit too much detail than what most people need, but it was interesting the way they kind of walked us through the entire idea of how they figured that out one way or the other.
It made as much sense as anything. I mean, it was a little bit of a Star Trek CSI moment, you know. But
it was.
But I was okay with a lot of it. But yes, the weird magic hologram generating hand scanner was blah.
No, I was not okay with that. But
so the other thing I was starting to say, though, about that flashback sequence, because that was where we started this whole conversation, is, and maybe it's just me, but it's really bothering the crap out of me about whose ships it was that actually attacked Mars.
Yeah, those like Delta Wing ships.
I'm assuming we're going to find out that they're the Romulan super secret android hating factions. Magic ships, then that's why nobody recognized them. And I feel like that's the only explanation that's going to make me happy at the fact that they've otherwise not addressed it, because it's kind of a pivotal detail.
Absolutely. And we know now it wasn't that the androids were flying the ships.
No, and at this point, I kind of just want somebody to say, like, the androids lowered the defenses, and we don't know who bombed us. I'd be okay with that. I'm just like, will somebody please address the fact that it wasn't just the androids, that a whole fleet of starships attacked Mars? Like, please talk about that for just a second.
The only part with that where I think it could be interesting, and it was just a brief line, so it might have been easy to miss, is when they were talking about, I believe it was Rizzo talking with Narek, and they were wanting to know if they had found the rest of them. What they call, they didn't call it the colony or something.
The nest of machines.
Yes, the nest.
Or something like that.
Yeah. Something like that, where it was, you know, kind of implying that they want, and the whole reason they wanted to capture Dodge, or now want to capture the other one, is they want to interrogate, find the rest.
Yeah.
Well, I read that as they're trying to find the rest of the Borg on the reclamation ship.
No.
I don't think so.
Because, I mean, they have the Borg on the reclamation ship. What they're wanting
to seem fully aware of what's going on with those. Yeah.
Yeah. They want to interrogate. I mean, Dodge wouldn't have had that. They want to interrogate them to find the rest of these alleged synthetics or.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of implying that wherever Maddox may be or whatever's going on, that there may be far more to this than what
he took his toys with him.
Yeah.
Well, and it's a little weird. It feels weird to me. I guess it could make sense or it could not, but it feels weird to me the fact that, you know, there are all these clandestine operations happening on Earth. And my assumption here is that Dodge can't be the first one. You know what I mean? And like even Picard is making this assumption that her sister is still alive and wasn't actually the first one that they hunted down and killed.
It seems like this
anti-synthetic task force covert thing has to be bigger than just Dash and her sister.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, even Star Trek, you know, Data was the first one until we got Lore, and then Lore was the first one until we got B4, and then soon made their mother into an android because she died. So I mean, we always continue to add on more. So I would not be surprised at all if there's more of a lineage there.
I'm still not completely convinced we won't see Lore pop up in the story somewhere along the way.
Well, he's still out there. I mean, the last time we saw him was Descent, and he wasn't destroyed.
No, I did some research on that actually, and from what I saw, the explanation for Lore's fate was that he was blasted in Descent and disassembled and kept aboard the Enterprise D in a tamper-proof vault of some kind.
Which it wasn't tamper-proof when it blew up
That's the question. That's the question where the thread lies is in the details I saw may or may not have come from the show. They may have come from a book or who knows what, but supposedly he was disassembled in his, we'll just say his brain, neural net, whatever you want to call it, was placed in this tamper-proof vault that was supposedly going to be destroyed if anybody tried to access it, and it was kept aboard the Enterprise D. Now we know that the Enterprise D crashed. We don't know what happened after that, whether the vault was recovered and moved to the E, what happened to it after he died. My point being that – now it's interesting to me. I guess I didn't realize that Data and Maddox kind of went on to have a – relationship as friends.
Yeah, it was referenced in one episode. It's called Data's Day, where he's doing like journal entries throughout the episode, and it's addressed to Maddox. He's sending the information to him.
Yeah, so I guess my point is my thought was that if Maddox still had any kind of nefarious intent about, and it wasn't even nefarious, he was doing what he thought would be right for the Federation, but if he still had any intent on creating more androids like Data, that, you know, there would have been an opportunity there where the Enterprise D crashed and, you know, maybe Lore's positronic matrix or whatever could have been recovered and covertly swept away to Daystrom to have who knows what happened to it. So I do think in saying all of this, I do think that there is a window open for Lore to make a comeback of some kind if that's the direction that the show decides to go.
Yeah, and I'm sure we're going to have some soon android action here sooner or later. Brent Spiner has said he wants to keep Data dead. I get that, but they are hinting so much that they've said in both episodes now, it's not just that, you know, we're trying to help Data's family as in his daughters. Yeah. There's a piece of Data in them, and I don't think he's just talking about the lineage. I think it may not be what actually happens, but I believe Picard is trying to get the essence of Data back.
Yeah, which I don't want them to do.
I don't either.
I don't want them to make a Data clone based on that about recreating his whole neural net from two molecules.
Well, I watched another review show, and I'm blanking on which one it is, or I would credit them, but the show didn't do a good job of explaining it, but what they said was it wasn't like just a piece. It was the whole idea is if you dig deep enough into coding, and Mike, you being the computer scientist, you can probably say this is completely BS, but if you dig deep enough into coding, you can gather enough information even from a piece of it in order to extrapolate out what the rest of the code was. And that's what they were getting at. Okay.
Yeah, I got that, I guess, but I guess I read it more like, and I'm sorry, we're getting super off topic and technical now, but I read it the way I interpreted that scene. My mind went to something like a RAID array where it's like, you've got three hard drives and one of them dies and you can use the information on the other two to reconstitute the third one that went away. And they were taking that to a crazy extreme of saying like, oh, you can pull any one like piece of his neural net and the whole thing can be extrapolated. I'm like, no, it can't. Like, there's no way.
Well, maybe in 300 years it can.
No, no. I mean, and they even almost countered themselves in this episode explaining how the computers work and did that whole thing of forensically recognizing Dodge versus her sister. It's like the computer builds shortcuts, and all of those shortcuts are indexed and put into this, like, you know, pathway index system. But if that goes away, that's gone. Like, that's not part of the code. The code says how to do that. But if you take all of the data that the thing has learned over time and throw it in the trash, you don't just get that back. It has to relearn it all. So you can't take data as some lifetime of experiences and things that he's stored away in his neural net and reconstitute it from, like, the part of his brain that recognizes the color yellow.
I just want real quick. This is definitely the first computer code rant I've ever heard on one of our podcasts. Sorry, thank you. No, I think it's great. I think it's a great conversation. Blake, go ahead.
I was going to say, I think B4 plays more into that than what they let on. Because they had B4 in the drawer there. Because in Nemesis, Data transferred all of his information into B4.
Yeah. And it, B4
well, it didn't work.
Capable of handling it, yeah.
But
and they, yeah, and they even talked about it, right? Yeah.
But at the same time,
I get what you're going for. Yeah.
But at the end of Nemesis, B4 started humming Blue Skies,
Which started and out reason, this TV show.
Which is exactly, and that's why I'm thinking it might hint to this, is because Blue Skies has been a theme of this through the previews into the first episode. So if there's a source where Maddox wanted to get at Data's memories, Data's essence, it could well have been in B4's whatever, even if B4 couldn't process it and utilize it.
And that would have given
some
them all the
big
code.
Piece. Yeah, it's like some big piece of data could have been reconstituted from what was transferred into B4, even if his body, his brain, couldn't handle it. And I think that was the whole implication of that scene in my mind, where they show B4 in the drawer, and then they make this explanation about how you can rebuild an AI. The thing that was weird was how it then disconnected, you know, from what happened on Mars and what level of Android technology actually did exist in practicality and how advanced that they were or were not.
And you're right. I mean, I joked that maybe they could do it in 300 years, but truly maybe they can do it in 20 from TNG to this. And that's what we're talking about here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the answer is no.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we're getting close to an hour here. I do want to talk a little bit about what we expect to see next. But before, is there anything else that we didn't hit on the episode you guys want to hit in kind of some short bursts? The one that I wanted to just one thing I wanted to say that I really actually enjoyed was on the attack on Mars. This is the first time we've truly gotten to see the lower decks of Star Trek, and I enjoyed the seeing the guys who are just the grunts who like these are what janitors look like. I still understand how they get told they have to work shifts when there's no money in the Federation, but whatever. But I did enjoy seeing those guys, and unfortunately we see them all get blasted and killed. But I mean, it was nice to see something that wasn't like the higher up leadership echelons of the
This was not the nice places of Utopia Planitia that we've seen in scenes before.
No, but it's always been a question of the economy of the Federation, the fact that you don't want to work on First Contact Day. Well, you're working for free, so no, I'm not.
I mean, there are some obvious weird problems with the assumption that in the future everybody just works because they want to.
Well, that's why Deep Space Nine threw it out the window and like, yeah, we still have some kind of monetary system here. Even the Federation had credits that they used.
You can do a lot of things for free, perhaps, but
I swear I didn't want to rant about the economy of the Federation, but I just like I did enjoy seeing those guys, even though we had to watch them all get blasted in the head soon after. But
I appreciated a little bit closer look at the ships that they were building for the evacuation effort. They were they looked very obviously purpose built like tugboats.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what they I mean, they were basically troop transports with warp drives. That's all they were.
They were shell ships carrying big cargo containers that could hold life. That's what it looked like.
It really
like
reminded me of there was an old RTS, and Mike, I think you may have played it, Birth of the Federation, and that they reminded me of the troop transports. They were the ships you used to colonize stuff.
Yeah.
Blake, did you have anything you wanted to add?
I think I'm good.
Okay. Let's go ahead and chat a little bit about what we want to see coming up here. We've already theorized a little bit. So go ahead, Mike.
Oh, I was just going to say, it's not even much of a comment. I just want to say I'm really fascinated with the direction that this whole Borg cube thing is going. I'm really, really interested in what that is and like what's going on there. The fact that they can't just be pulling technology, disassembling Borg corpses. You know what I mean? Like there's got to be some other goal. It's the Romulans.
Well, yeah, and there's different goals in that ship. You have whatever the Romulans are trying to do, but also what the scientists are trying to do. Obviously, what's-her-face, Dodge's sister, is trying to provide some kind of counseling to these folks as they're coming out of Borgification. But spoiler-wise, if you did watch Ready Room, they did show a scene from next episode, and Hugh is in the next episode.
I did see that as well.
Yeah,
in fact, there's a full episode description out on IMDb. I just noticed when actually point out the fact that Hugh is in the next episode,
which already throws out. Blake and I complain about Midnight's Edge a lot. Their big thing was Hugh doesn't show up until the very end of the series. Well, that all goes out the window because he's going to show up next episode.
Oh my, imagine my shock that Midnight's Edge is wrong. Sorry.
But yeah. I'm very much intrigued too. There's definitely something going on there. For one, is it a random cube or is it a cube that we've dealt with before? Because there's been multiple cubes out there.
Oh yeah, they talk about the fact that it like underwent some kind of collapse. And what caused that to happen?
Yeah, and it got
I have lots of questions about it. Yeah.
Well, and this is a deep cut, but there's one cube we've never seen, but we know has been impacting the Beta Quadrant for a while. And there was an episode of TNG, and I can't remember what the episode is now, where they had seen planet scarring that they knew was a cube, but they never actually ran into that cube. So there was always at least one floating around the Beta Quadrant causing trouble. So that may be a tie-in, or it may just be a random one. We hit this a new one. It's obviously not the one from First Contact because that one got blown up. It's not the one from Wolf 359 because that one got blown up. So it's a different one.
Yeah, I don't expect them to link this to anything that we've seen before. I just find it interesting what the story actually is and how the Romulans came into possession of this. Did it travel into their space and did they defeat it? Did it travel into their space and fall apart for some reason?
Well, and they definitely had it for a while because no assimilations for 5,100 days, whatever it was.
Yeah, I thought was humorous. Yeah. Well, I think it's really interesting the fact that they talk about, like, well, there are still active Borg, on this ship in sections
if you're going about their business. If your little tag turns green, run.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, we all know that we're going to see those tags turn green sometime in this series, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
100%. Chekhov's gun is hanging over the mantle right now.
Well, I kind of thought it was, on a somewhat side note tangent, that apparently Harry Treadaway's character, Merrick, his infiltration strategy was to go bone an android. Got right to business.
as we were informed in the show, and as I was informed on side chat, he is a hot Romulan.
Apparently so.
Things we never thought we'd say on a podcast. A hot Romulan boning an android. There you go.
It's kind of.
He knows she's an android.
Yeah, that's just it. He's going into it knowing what he's doing. And it's kind of freaking me out. Like, I'm familiar with that character because on a completely coincidental side note, I've been watching Penny Dreadful. So,
which is a lot of boning in that show, too.
There sure is. But he does not look, at least to me, he doesn't look remotely like the same person in either show. Like, I know it's the same actor, and I cannot tell to look at them. So.
And there's a lot of stuff they're setting up. I mean, like, he talks about how they lost their brother last year, whenever that needs to be in the last episode. So I don't, there's a lot going on. I think this is more a family affair than an imperial affair. But we'll see.
You know, I wondered about that, and I almost said that earlier when you commented on that. It could be, but alternatively, I've talked in various podcasts before about how I kind of have this problem with a trend of writing in Hollywood these days is that every character is related to every yes. other character by blood for no mm-hmm. reason at all. And so that could just be another one of those.
Very well could know. Be. But yeah, so in terms of the next episode, we're still on Earth, but we're finally going to meet some of the new crew. We're going to meet his first officer. And the only reason why I know she's the first officer, because she was his first officer when he was Admiral. She was the first officer of the Verity. We saw that in the comic book Countdown. Mm-hmm. This next episode will be building the crew. I'm still not sure how that scene we keep seeing on the Riker's lakeside property plays into things, because he's already said he doesn't want to reach out to them, but
yeah, which I actually appreciated that moment in this episode. Yeah. Like you said, I'm surprised we haven't seen it yet, because I really thought the first few episodes would be front loaded with all the cameos. And just the pace and everything that the story is going in. I'm wondering when it is we're going to see the Riker mm-hmm. show up. I'm now almost thinking it might be the dead end of this series, where it's kind of the semi-conclusion of season one story arc, and now there's a thing looming for season two, and he's looking for approval to go do it, and maybe we're not going to see the Rikers until the very end.
And that would make sense, because I'm thinking from one of the previews, and I can't remember which one it was, but isn't the line where he's with the Rikers, and granted it's a voiceover, but the line is, "I think I'm in over my head."
Yeah.
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 So I think that sets up that scene's going to come later as he kind of gets into this and realizes.
They're on Beta Zed and not Earth.
And I almost look for season one to end on a big cliffhanger because of that.
I went down the way they're hyping up season two so much.
We already know that there's a season two makes me think that it was always going to be a season one and two.
Well, they said three.
Yeah, even Patrick Stewart says he thinks he can see this going for three seasons, which I think a couple of things I think are going to happen, and I've mentioned one of them already last episode. I do think with Eremonic Syndrome or whatever this is being popped in, I do think, as like you said, Logan is something they're looking at. I think this series, not this season, this series will end with Picard's death.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think that's just kind of at this point they're really hinting at that. It's the last hurrah, it's Unforgiven. He's going for one last mission. That mission will not be over at the end of season one, but I think that's where we're heading towards.
Yeah, and I mean, they're almost leaning into this idea of, I'm about to embark on a super dangerous thing, let alone that I might be dying anyway. Well, why I'm not going to reach out to my friends, because they're going to go with me, even though they probably should use their own brain power and say no.
Well, and I did appreciate the doctor saying, hopefully this mission kills you before this other thing does. It kind of gives Picard a kick in the butt to, you know, do what he's trying to do.
And some weight to the fact of what it is that he's facing down the barrel of.
And really, I mean, Star Trek wise, he's middle age. I mean, a little bit more of that in canon, he's around 90 in the show. Patrick Stewart 79, but we saw McCoy at 137,
like a zombie.
I'm getting that is, even at 90 years old, that death sentence he received this episode is, it's like being told at 60 nowadays that you're going to die. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So his life is being snatched away from him. But a couple other things, is the prediction wise, I wanted to throw out there is, and Blake and I kind of mentioned this, I think, on a side chat too, is I do think we're going to see Worf. I think that's one of the cameos that they have kept quiet, but I would not be surprised if a Bird of Prey shows up at the, you know, as a Deus Ex Klingon and shows up and saves the day. But I also think Q is going to be involved in this in some way, not as a main character of this plot. I don't think he's involved in the android thing, but just meta-wise, I think I think sooner or later, maybe even the last episode, we're going to see John DeLancey show up as well too.
I wondered about that too. He's such a pivotal character to the whole thing.
Not even just the TNG, to Picard as a
to person. To Picard as a character, yeah. Yeah,
he is his Moriarty.
You know, I don't really look for Q to happen until season two based on the talk of Guinan making a reappearance in season two.
Those two definitely play off together. The only reason why I'm saying it – oh, go ahead.
Yeah, no, that's it.
No, the only reason why I'm saying it is because of that one picture that leaked on the internet. Mm. And it was actually – and it got pulled down real quick. There was a video of a guy doing just – shots of photography on the set, and off to the side you see this red glove on somebody, and it's a very quick shot, but I have a feeling if that's the cliffhanger, I don't know, but I think John DeLancey is going to show up. So those are my two cameos I'm assuming are going to show up sooner or later that have not been talked about.
Well, and I kind of think that would make sense in the framing, because we recognize this after we recorded last time, but the opening shot of Picard was very similar to the opening shot of TNG.
No, yes, absolutely. Where
you had zooming into the windows.
Yeah, and at that point it was the ready room, wasn't it?
Observation lounge.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Whereas the last shot of TNG wasn't the courtroom with Q. It was Picard playing cards with the crew.
Correct.
But you had that last courtroom scene with Q.
Mm-hmm.
He said, trial never ends.
Well, he also pointed out, for one brief second, you thought beyond what you have already known, you went beyond that. And I don't see that in this storyline with the artificial intelligence and the synths and all that, but I really do hope that we get more to the evolution of Picard, but also the evolution of humanity sometime down this road too. Cause I think that's what TNG has been driving towards.
I almost look for this season to remain more grounded in the AI uprising / this new storyline with the Romulan, I forgot their name again, anti-AI coalition.
Taja Labuda.
Something Vash. What was it like?
Zadvash.
Zadvash. But, you know, yeah, I do. I kind of look for it to remain grounded in that. We might start to see the hint or we might even fully see the beginning of the Federation's breaking down as a result of being compromised, you know, by external forces. And that's the point when I could start to see the world kind of open up, or the problem, the scope of the problem opening up, and then Picard and, you know, Q make more sense in that moment. Because there's a self-doubt, you know, whatever you want to call it.
The androids are a symptom, not the actual issue.
Right. Yes.
I gotcha. Cool. Anything else, guys, you want to talk about before we're done?
I'm good.
We've definitely gone off the rails enough for one night, right?
Yes.
No, I think that's it for this one.
Sweet. So next week we will be talking about episode 3. And again, maybe we're going to leave Earth. Maybe not. We'll see. I don't know.
Yeah, we might get a parting shot of them flying away at the end. I'm not sure.
I honestly think that we're going to, there'll be like the last, again, going back to this as being the end of chapter 1, I bet you we get like an engage right at the end of the episode. And that's where we go from there.
Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think from the previews how many other what I think are going to be the crew characters that we've yet to see. There's obviously the sword wielding
Vulcan and/or Romulan.
they've said he's a Romulan.
Is he a Romulan? Okay.
And then the new first officer chick who we just met. We'll find out more about her, and then we'll meet the new suave captain character.
Yeah, you mean Mal from Firefly? Because that's who he
Trek
is.
Trek Solo. Yeah.
Trek Solo.
I'm trying to think if there are any additional, because that seems like a lot for one episode, but I bet the whole next episode will be based on more or less introducing those characters. And then, as you say, at the end, we'll get they're all saddled up, ready to fly off to save the universe.
I will say one thing. Obviously, they've talked about the two former Tal Shiar agents staying on the vineyard. I don't want them to die because I really like those two characters a lot. So they just need to stay on the vineyard. The one chick is obviously Irish Romulan. Steven says cheeky efforts. That was another F bomb we forgot. She says it there too.
She's from the Emerald Isle region of.
Well, it's green. she's Romulus by way of Ireland. I don't know, but I want those two guys to survive. So, they're not on the ship. I'm just saying I don't want them to die. Okay. Well, we'll go ahead and wrap things up here. And then, as I mentioned, next week we'll be doing the next episode. There are 10 episodes, so we have 8 more of these to go. Mm-hmm. And then I think what we'll start doing, so we don't take another year and a half hiatus because Discovery Season 3 is coming up fairly soon, is I do want to go back and talk about Discovery Season 2. So
I think we should roll straight into Discovery Season 2 after this.
Yeah, and so that's why I'm saying for you guys, too, if you're not doing a rewatch, you may want to start one, because I think after Picard's done in, say, March, we'll start hitting on that as well, too.
Sounds good.
Okie dokie. So until next week, I have been Scott, and still am. I don't know why I said I have been, but there I am. And with me has been...
Mike.
And Blake.
And we will see you in the front row. I actually remember this tag that time. Until then, peace and long life.
Discovering Star Trek is a production of the Front Row Network of Shows. For more information, go to www.thefrontrowmoviereviews.com.